Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Maybe we jump to conclusions about him.
Well, he may not be a monster, but he is stealing my water with his roots.
Stealing? Absurd. Why, I ought to draw you out.
And I ought to chop you down.
You want a piece of me?
No.
Sounds like you two need each other. I mean, think about it. Flotter, your water helps his trees grow. And Trevis, your branches shade his palm from the sun. It's a well-known fact that the sun makes water evaporate.
She's got a point.
The girl's a thinker.
Now shake hands and make up.
Ugh, moist palms.
Sappy fingers.
Neelix to holodeck too.
Naomi here.
It's bedtime.
Dan, Jesse, I have a question for you.
Yeah, what's that?
That question is, which of these characters is more horrifying? Flotter, Trevis, or Neelix?
Still think it's Neelix.
Which one of those is sort of the most nightmare fuel inducing?
I think it's still Neelix. I was impressed with the costumes.
Flotter T. Water the Third.
When that one scene where Flotter T. Water started peeing out his finger hole, yeah.
Okay, that's not how I interpreted it. Especially since it was like a conical mist.
Yeah, but then you have Trevis who goes.
So that's a. It was a somewhat rhetorical question, but I just thought let's get started here with the meat and potatoes of this whole episode, which is those three nightmarish characters. Okay. Yeah. All right. Hello.
Hi, Neelix. Did you miss me?
No. Hi. I hope you all missed
me. Hey, Naomi.
Hey.
Wake up.
Okay, it's good to be back. I was off last week on vacation. Thank you.
Hey there.
Thank you, Dan and Jesse, for taking the reins, doing a good job.
That was
hi, honey.
I had a wonderful time listening to your discussion of The Communicator.
That's right.
I got to listen to the podcast that I'm normally on.
Yeah.
It was wild.
Well, you were on the other side of it.
I was on the other side of it.
How did it feel to be on the other side?
It was great. It was fun.
This is fantastic.
I had an enjoyable time listening to that.
So I feel like you should be given an opportunity to answer this question. Do you feel like I am more of a wiener or a dingus?
Oh, I thought you were going to ask about the Jesse's question about what Android phone to get.
Oh, because no, I was just. But we could do that too.
Because I'm quite satisfied with my Pixel 7.
See, I kind of assumed that you'd be, especially considering you announced it like at the end of every voicemail/email.
Oh yes, last week I did slip that in.
I figured you're into it in a big way. So.
Jesse, we'll get this out of the way real quick, and then we'll get the other stuff going. Jesse, not the Jesse who's sitting across from me.
No.
No, Jesse from the Open Pike Night podcast, who last week had asked if we had advice on Android phones. I don't have specific advice other than to say, while your mileage may vary, I have been pretty happy with the Pixel line. There's pluses and minuses, but I think having the higher end phone, especially for the camera and storage and responsiveness of the screen, it's worth a little bit of extra investment, whichever brand you may go with.
Do you remember that show Pinwheel? It was all like, Pinwheel, spinning around, look at my pinwheel and see what I found. Yeah. It had like the knockoff Bert and Ernie's, which was like plus and minus.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
You said pluses and minuses, and it made me think of the characters.
They were
plus and minus. They were fake Muppet things.
I don't know if I ever watched that show because we only watched brand name television.
It was in my house. Some weird dude in the basement.
It was like during the day on Nickelodeon, they would play this.
I was probably at work.
And that's
was it Canadian?
I don't know, but that's where, remember how Mike Myers would have that sketch where he'd be like Simon?
Yes.
He's like, well, you know, my name is Simon, and I like to do drawings. And he would always be like, you cheeky monkey. But that comes from an actual...
Pinwheel. Does that come from Pinwheel?
Pinwheel, there's
I thought that came from some kind of PBS.
No, I'm almost positive that it was on Pinwheel.
I believe.
Because they'd play these side episodes of these things, and one of the episodes they'd play is this Simon, and it was all like... super creepy sounding, and like the whole vibe was like really terrifying.
I mean, I remember Simon as a real thing, but I guess I don't remember where.
Super creepy, like this episode of Voyager.
I could be wrong about the pinwheel thing, but I don't think I am.
Anyway. I believe you.
All right.
Well, I mean, I might just be wrong.
I will not contest.
I'm not
getting back to your question.
I could be wrong.
Dan, your question, which I believe, again, was asked last week, if I recall correctly, by frequent contributor Isaac.
And Jack.
Was whether or not you are a wiener or a dingus.
Yes.
No, they asked whether I was a wiener or a dingus.
Dan's a dingus.
Dude. Oh, so you're asking, but you're asking me what I think of you.
Yeah, I mean, I got to put in my what I thought. Now,
well, so did Jesse, am I supposed to say whether he's a wiener or a dingus?
Only if he asks. It's up to you. That's between you all.
My name's Paul, and this is between you all.
What a
stupid podcast. All right, let's get started. We haven't even said this is
sounds
the,
like you two mean each other.
This is the It's Got Star Trek podcast. You're both dinguses, by the way.
Yeah,
this is the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
This is a podcast full of dinguses.
This is the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Hey, dingus.
What do you mean?
Now fully reformed after a brief vacation, where it's like we're like a mini Voltron. Captain Planet, except it's more like
Voltron Sword.
Captain Washington Metropolitan DC area.
That sounds a little scary.
Okay. And
Captain
this week we will be
so creepy things.
Eventually we will be discussing Star Trek Voyager.
Wait, it's
Flotta, Trevis, and the Ogre of Fire.
That's what we're watching,
well,
right?
The Ogre of Fire.
Yeah, that was a bad pick.
Ogre of Fire. Of Fire. Of Fire.
In fact.
Fire.
No.
Fire.
No.
Fire.
No.
Ogre of Fire.
it was, in fact, titled Once Upon a Time.
Oh.
Once Upon a Time.
Once.
Yes, that one.
And so, okay, we'll get right into it. Couple of things up at the front. First of all, we will be doing a brief fun-em-up on the topic of the title Once Upon a Time.
When?
In the second break.
Some people call them funaroos.
Funarino is what you were calling things Renos, but yeah, I've already factored that in.
We don't do that.
Well, I heard that in the podcast, and I was like, you know what?
I don't know.
I kind of like
Maybe
that.
Maybe we did do that.
That Reno. Yeah, Dan did that. I think you assiduously avoided using that suffix.
That's not
okay.
On the red.
We do have a Patreon. I've got to go through this list of things. Patreon.com/It's Got Star Trek. Go check it out. Pay us money.
Exactly.
Pay us money, get a small amount of nonsense in return. News-em-ups.
Or a large amount.
News-em-ups. In addition to you know what? That's right. We're not calling it a second break fun-em-up. Because
explain.
Because it's really more of a second break informerino.
Oh.
Believe you me, there's more here than meets the eye.
It's an informerino.
Informerino.
An informerino.
It's not even a newsarino. Informerino.
No, it's not fun.
News-em-ups already exist, but an informerino is a new thing.
It's a
new thing because you started saying some sort of Reno business, it's an informerino on
public service messenger
on the topic of Once Upon a Time as a phrase and title.
You don't have the right.
In fact, I do. It's right here in my notes.
It says, don't understand what's at stake here.
I do. It's the mild.
He's got notes, dude.
It's the mild entertainment of tens of people out there.
You wouldn't have liked it.
That's what's at stake
tens
here, Dan.
Tens of people.
We gotta be on the ball, Johnny on the spot here. But for news and ups, just a couple of things real quick. I would like everyone out there to keep an eye out for episode 160. I believe it will be of the Green Shirt Podcast, in which I joined them to discuss TNG's Force of Nature.
Clever.
Yes. And it was a blast, as always. I've been on their show a number of times before. It's always fun. Their podcast is way better than ours. You should check it out. If you don't know, the whole deal with Green Shirt is that one of the hosts has never seen TNG before, and so he's going through watching each episode with co-hosts who have seen it. And so now, as you can tell, they're in the seventh season, Force of Nature, halfway through the seventh season, or more than halfway, so getting towards the end. They've also started incorporating mini reviews of Deep Space Nine, which is super fun too. So check it out, Force of Nature. It should be coming out soon after this episode is released.
Acknowledged.
That you're listening to now. And also, don't miss out on episode 163 of Let's Talk About Treks, which I think came out just last week. So it's going to be second probably in your feed on that feed. and that's where, yes, frequent IGST contributor, one-time guest Isaac is their guest on there, and what they do is they discuss Discovery. They cover they discuss all of Discovery. They talk about their favorite seasons, what the show meant to them, behind the scenes stuff. It's another really, really much better podcast that you should listen to. No, it's
what do you mean?
It's a really cool discussion about the whole season or the whole series, I should say, of Star Trek Discovery. So definitely worth checking out. That. All right.
How do I know you're telling me the truth this time?
You're just going to have to take it on faith. And we know that's what Star Trek's all about.
Faith of the heart.
Yes, faith of the heart. It need not be a long road from here to there if you don't dilly-dally. That was the problem with the Vulcans were dilly-dallying. That's why it took them the whole Enterprise people it was a long road because the Vulcans made the road all twisty and turny instead of straight.
Yeah.
You know?
It took
forever. I don't get it.
Get out to
you get
I don't
it.
Get it.
You turn it back. All
right. There's two of them, Trip Tucker saying I don't get it.
I don't get it. I don't get it.
Well, that's two so far. We have
He doesn't get
that, it. That, he's not even in this.
And I added one to my best of.
I'm a regular bloodhound.
Yes. That's a great one. Yeah. Again, from last week's episode. Okay. No mail-em-ups this week. If you do want to send us an email, feedback@itscottstartrek.com, voicemail, itscottstartrek.com/record, or just send us an MP3 or whatever. We would love to engage and interact with you listeners. All right. So, yeah, let's get into it. Creepy, weird episode.
Well, here goes.
I think it's considered by many people to be a classic, or at least like a middling classic.
It's certainly strange and out of the ordinary.
I thought at first it was going to be like a whole holodeck style episode, but that was really just a small part of it. The whole once upon a time thing, I guess it was just because it wasn't about like Naomi coming to grips with stuff. It was about how Neelix was like dumping.
It was him coming to grips with stuff.
Yeah, I mean, and he was like dumping. He was like, do we have a story, an origin story for how he became her godfather?
Yeah, it's in there somewhere. I forget how it goes.
He was like he was friends, and I think he helped save Samantha Wildman's
life. Is the dad back in the Alpha? Genus?
Yeah, so the dad.
There was a separation.
The dad is a spiky headed alien named Griebel Nork or something like that. Griggly Blops. He works on Deep Space Nine, and he doesn't even know that Samantha Wildman was pregnant. I guess they had a brief affair or something before she got lost in the Delta Quadrant with Voyager. And father is out of the picture.
I didn't know he was a godfather until like halfway through the episode when they went to the ogre the forest on fire and Neelix was like, "This is scary, it's time for your bed," and she's like, "No, it's great, I love it." And he's like, "Don't argue with your godfather." Yeah. I was like, "Oh, that's weird." I figured that.
Which is like not really a real thing.
Maybe he just thought he was the head of an Italian crime organization.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's what he meant. I don't buy that. You think that's what probably not.
Well, Neelix was, I mean, he was putting all of his baggage onto her. Like, obviously, he was talking about, like, oh, she doesn't like to be, Naomi doesn't like to be scared and stuff like that. Well, she obviously did like to be scared because she was in the holodeck and he was, like, trying to bring her to bed and she wanted to stay. But then he's all telling Harry, he's like, Harry's like, kids like to be scared. He's like, oh, not Naomi, not her, you know. And
this is,
And he was like, and it was getting to the point where he was finally lying to her, like, when he goes, when she was asking about her mom, and he was like, I'm sure everything's okay.
Yeah.
That is the point in which it actually moved over from just, like, pushing her off to the side to actually potentially damaging her.
This is a classic
that,
case.
Like, that damages someone when, and the only time he told the truth was when he got called out on
it. Yes.
That's exactly. It. So, you
but
know,
he's in denial and he's projecting. He's doing both yes. of those things.
Yeah, because his fear of the forest yeah. of how he's projecting his fear of the forest on
however,
her.
And I'm going to examine this with y'all.
The fire forest.
I'm going to examine this with y'all
because that weird fire scene where they got burned up.
I believe we're intended.
The Metreon Cascade.
I believe we're intended to be sympathetic to Neelix's situation. However, Dan, from your tone, and please correct me if I'm incorrect. Your tone sounds like you're not particularly sympathetic to Neelix in this storyline.
No, he's like kind of just a dick to everybody.
Yeah.
Like Harry, he's all like talking to him. He's like, hey, you didn't make that doll right. You're getting shit all fucked up. But actually, no, to his credit, though, did you see how that doll looked when it came out? The head was this
It
gorgeous.
Was pretty good, dude.
The doll was horrifying.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, and the thing that's crazy about the doll is I was looking up some background facts, and according to Memory Alpha, apparently at least some people on the production crew really thought and were hoping that this doll would take off as merchandise and make them a bunch of money.
Yeah.
And I was like, do you see this doll? The actual Flotter was horrifying enough, and then you add on the twisted, distorted face on this doll. It was horrible.
Guess who I found at the replicator?
Yeah, that was. Did they really thought that they could make that into merchandise?
That's according to Memory Alpha.
Wow,
the one That's stop something. Shop for all the facts and figures you need about Star Trek.
That's
so
sometimes
Janeway, he like bit her head off, you know, when she was trying to be yeah. all smooth, and she handled that pretty yeah. well. But fucking Seven of Nine, like he fucking straight up was like, she gave him two looks. One of them when he was talking about asking her about her parents, and she's like, I don't really remember my parents. He's like, maybe that's for the best.
She shot him like, what the fuck?
He's just like, fuck
that's
you.
Fucked up. She's like, yeah. Well, I know that's a fucked up thing to say.
Yeah. But then like when she started like giving good advice, like, yeah. don't worry, Naomi will adapt. He's like, Borg logic, you know? And then she gave him a second look, yeah. just like, fuck you, man.
Yeah.
And so like, I didn't understand why he was being so excessively rude to Seven of Nine.
Neelix sucks.
Dude. I guess there was a lot of prejudice towards Borg still at that point.
Yeah,
but
oh yeah, totally.
I take a slightly more sympathetic perspective, or at least I'm more.
And he
open.
And he lies like he not lies to Naomi.
Yes.
He's like projecting his fears onto yes. her. You know,
I
and he talks and he talks down to her the entire episode
yes,
too.
Yes, of course. Okay, so first of all, that last point is slightly debatable because she is a child.
Yeah, but I think he. Okay, first of all, she's supposed to be like 5 years old. She looks older than.
Oh
five,
yeah. Oh no, the Naomi. It's one of the classics.
She's older than that other alien chick he was bumming around the galaxy.
She's way older than Cass. It's a long-standing joke that Naomi, kind of like Alexander, like all of a sudden became like a full-grown walking around human.
Right.
You can always say, oh, it's part alien blood. Why not? She grows right. quickly. No, but I'm saying I'm a little bit more open to what I think the intention of the episode was, which was not for us to think that what Neelix is doing is the correct thing to do, but rather that we realize, perhaps too late in the storyline, but we realize that this is a function of his trauma.
Right.
Right? And it is one of the first times, it's fifth season, and it's one of the first times we get some actual proper characterization of Neelix.
I forget the actor's yeah. name.
Ethan Phillips.
Ethan Phillips.
He's brilliant. He's
great,
always great.
He's a great actor, but he did a good job with Neelix. But yeah. here's the thing. Neelix's character has rooted itself so much in my mind that it's hard to take him seriously, even when so someone's doing a good job of
yes,
acting.
I get you.
His
I get
part.
You, I get you. Yeah. yeah.
I still can't yeah. take that guy seriously. Like when he started freaking out at like Janeway, you
I
know.
Know.
And, I don't know.
It's like, dude, like on the bridge, like
I know, right?
And like, you know,
he did a great job. It's just I'm still like that's
she
could have
totally like freaked out on him and be like that, you know, like
this
I'm,
episode
I'm the fucking captain. Dude.
This episode has a lot of standout performances.
One more cup and I'll jump to warp.
standout performances. One of them being Janeway, Kate Mulgrew. Janeway's always great, but this is a really good example of Janeway approaching things in a level-headed fashion. Even though it's sort of a low-key, middle-key emergency, right? I mean, she's potentially going to lose people she cares about and stuff. But it's not like the ship is going to explode or anything, right? So it's not one of those types of emergencies.
Yeah, but it's fucking Tuvok.
But she's got...
Splash!
She's having to deal with this Neelix thing. But I did appreciate that we get to flesh out some of the facts we knew about Neelix, because we knew, like, going way back, there's...
Oh, right.
We knew Neelix was...
he's from Rhinox or something?
I don't know. That sounds made up. But I guess there's all made up. No, but like,
oh, the, like
I knew that his planet was like all destroyed by war or something, and so he was like on the run. Like that's why he was a scamp and a scoundrel and all that jazz.
Space creep.
Yeah, he's a space creep.
What's the Metreon Cascade? What's that all about?
I forget the details. It was some weapon of control or something of his planet,
word.
Something like that, or like some maybe it was some enemies, some.
It sounds terrifying, and it's all mysterious. And,
it was.
I mean, that was like his dream,
yeah.
But still.
Yeah, it was like the dream version, the nightmares that he was having. Because I think he didn't necessarily, I think he might have even been off planet. I forget the details, but I think he was, in his dream, he was positioning himself to imagining what the deaths of his family were like.
Yeah.
Which is one of those things where it's like, oh yeah, that's also a form of trauma where it's like your family just disappears, and it's like you don't know exactly what the deal is.
Totally.
When you were just saying... it can be whatever it wants it to be. That reminded me of the line when Naomi goes, "Thanks, but that's not really Flotter." And Neelix goes, "Flotter's not really Flotter." I like that line for some reason.
He was like, he's just a character in a holiday.
But then, you kind of ruined it in the second sentence. Because he was like, "Well, Flotter's not Flotter." And you're like, "Whoa, that's crazy." But then he's like, "He's just a character in the holodeck."
Yeah.
And I just said, like, I don't know. He just, every time he talked to him, he was just like,
Well, so I think what we're demonstrating tonight is that it can be hard to overcome the previous history
of a
character.
Like, and he's,
"No, you're not." "No, you're not."
Because, like, okay, what this story partly is,
pig.
Like, look, partly it's Neelix dealing with his trauma, and partly it's a Neelix as nurturer story. Mm-hmm. And what we're just not as used to that. He's really good in the Neelix as nurturer, and this is not the only time he does that, but when Neelix is in nurturing mode, he's very good. Neelix as nurturer is a more interesting story.
Neelix versus nurture.
Than Neelix as sort of statutory sex predator. which is how we're introduced to him.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I get the feeling, certainly, Dan, maybe Jesse, that it's a little hard for you to, like, overcome that. I'm right there with you, but I also, like, I appreciated the basic structures and ideas in this story.
Yeah.
That they were willing to play with trauma and have an adult do things that are not the right thing because it's an interesting scenario where it's like, okay, you're like a de facto guardian of this child. How do you help this child? Oh, you're worried about this thing that you've dealt with and you want to protect them from this specific thing, not realizing that you might be fucking them up even worse. And that's sort of like a classic tale, right? Of like somebody fucking up their child with best intentions.
Yeah. I did enjoy this episode. I thought it was a pretty entertaining episode, especially with all the trippy, like, Flotter, T-Water, and Treva's stuff.
That stuff was really neat.
Now, I guess there was I guess the Shuttle's thing was a B story, but it was just kind of a directly related to like the A story.
It was not even a B story.
It was just a
justification.
Yeah, and it was like kind of like I never felt the tension really in that whole part. Like, I mean,
the actors brought some of the tension, but the storyline and the production did not. Right, because you don't see anything on the outside of the ship of the Delta Flyer. You're just told that they like crash into the ground. It sort of doesn't make any sense.
How did they get 3 kilometers underneath the ground without getting squished? I don't know. Inertial dampers, I guess.
I mean, there's something weird about the material. It's like what were they? Blah, blah, blah.
Duranium. Tight terranium.
It was like Binomax or something.
Binomax.
Maxillanium.
Now I want to find out what this was.
I think it was Benonite.
Benonite.
Like before they even crash landed, they were talking about, oh, that's we're gonna like get swallowed up or get buried.
It was 50 kilotons of Bemonite.
Bemonite.
Kiloton.
Well, I suppose it could also be the nature of the actual asteroid that they crashed into. But there is some behind.
Neelix is from Rhinax. That's where he's from. Right. Rhinax.
I think that's what you said, isn't it?
I think I said Rhinax.
As long as you didn't say Retinax, which is medicine to fix your eyes, which Captain Kirk is allergic to.
Interesting.
Right. So
Borg wisdom.
Yes, indeed. So behind the scenes stuff that I was able to dig up about this story.
Able to dig up.
If I recall correctly, I believe it was written by Michael Taylor.
Oh, Michael.
And
I'm Borg.
He was known for doing a lot of really great ideas. Apparently the original idea that he had for this story would have had the bulk of the story, the vast majority of it, actually take place in the fantasy land.
See, then that's what I thought was going to happen when I was watching.
And the idea was that the audience would be viewing things sort of from the perspective of Naomi and or Neelix, whoever, but with only
Naomi,
with only hints of the scenario coming from the outside, right? Mm-hmm. Where you're just sort of like Naomi, you don't have enough information and you're sort of getting some weird vibes.
Naomi!
And what happened apparently was that the idea was is that they're in this fantasy holosuite kind of hiding from the fact that there's like some big battle going on outside where in which Samantha Wildman's at risk. And so it's the same basic idea of protecting Naomi, but
Naomi!
With this big battle going on. And... And I think it was Rick Berman, who was like, "We're already doing a war on Deep Space Nine. We don't want any war on Voyager right now.
No war on Voyager.
We don't want to do a war story. So no.
I'm not scared of any tree monster, Miss Wildman.
So he's like, don't do a battle. Okay. So then they came up with the idea. One of them, Brandon Braga, came up with the idea of doing like a crashed shuttle, and that's what caused the problem. But then somehow, like along the way, like
ion storm,
adding that into the story. By the way, this was supposedly a last minute change too. Like they all had to all the writers were working furiously to finish.
Where would I stay?
And so they came up with the shuttle thing, but then they ended up being like, okay, well, it sort of doesn't make sense. We have to explain it a little more. So there was more and more was like getting out of the fantasy realm.
Right.
And I think, I'm guessing you agree, Dan, that they cut way too far back on that. Because as nightmarish as these horrifying, horrible, horrible, horrible creatures were, they were interesting and engaging. And being in that world was like really cool.
Dude, something about Flotter's outfit and makeup, like he looks so shiny and like squishy, but not squishy. I don't know, he had the sheen on him.
The tree guy I thought was really cool.
Yeah, and then Flotter, I guess it was just whatever kind of leathery kind of thing they were. I wonder if he was wearing
Kind of
he was just wearing like some kind of leather suit or something. Leather. I don't know.
Okay.
He seems so shiny.
It was definitely not leather. I mean, it was probably this is like latex, painted latex.
You can't get leather wet.
Well, you know, like what people wear for bondage, like leather, that kind of leather.
Yeah, but Jesse's right. You can't get leather wet. He's a wet guy. Because if you get it'll dry and it'll tighten up.
Maybe it's shark skin.
But he's not really made of leather. That's just the outfit. He doesn't actually have to get wet in order to play that part.
Doesn't he?
No.
He comes up out of the water.
Yeah.
He turns into water. I will say that ogre, fire ogre level was like, that was pretty scary.
Yeah.
It's pretty traumatizing to see Flotter, evaporate.
Even though the fire ogre looked like the sun from Teletubbies. it was like a face in a circle.
And the tree guy is like, what kind of wood is that guy? He didn't burn up at all? He's still hanging around? It's some kind of old growth.
What
he said, when he leaned over, cedar. He was like, timber.
Yeah,
you'll be nice.
That was a good joke.
Oh yeah,
timber joke.
You were saying. Oh, you know, also
me was saying.
You know what else was also a good joke? When she was like,
his bark was worse than his bite.
That was a good pun, right? Even Neelix thought so.
Where did you learn to make such silly puns?
That's a good one, yeah.
Where did you learn to make such silly puns?
No, you're not. Where did you learn to make such silly puns? No, you're not. Where did you learn to make such silly puns?
Good question. Dan, you
what
I was saying.
He interrupted himself.
I did. I was going back to what you were saying about it expecting it to be more in the land, the super land. Yeah, I thought that's where they were going to go. Yeah. And I was concerned that it was going to be too much, but then I found they took away too much. Like, I'm glad the whole thing wasn't in there, but I would have liked some more time in there, because also it made the title make less sense. Because it wasn't as focused on that land as I thought they were going to be. But I think that would have been better. It seems like that would have gotten expensive or something.
Well, maybe. I mean, they already had the costumes and the guys and the
yeah. I guess you're set, right.
And this is like old school TV where it's not all that long, and they got a bunch of commercials and shit. Like if this was like more like modern Star Trek, they could have done a full episode. There would have been more like stuff.
It's not like they saved money and spent it on the special effects, because we see barely any special effects.
I've forgotten that they would do this in Star Trek, but like they went to commercial break with about 3 or 4 minutes left in the episode. Right. Like I remember that
basketball game.
Yeah, and coming back and seeing just so you could see the last 2 minutes of Star Trek, and it's like, come on, guys.
Well, one thing that one thing I really liked.
No.
And I thought that was very effective use of the holodeck in this episode. But I agree, it would have been better if they had been able to do this more.
Holograms.
But what was cool about the stories that they were acting out was that, like a fable, they had a lesson, but the lessons were focused on science and problem solving, as opposed to morals.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really cool, and it made me think about the fact that you don't see a lot of that, even in like modern stories, modern kids' tales. They might not be like moralistic, like some of the Grimm's fairy tales or some of those things, but they're still like, I don't know. I shouldn't say that. There's like problem solving and stuff.
There's a bit of a lesson.
But this was very, it felt very Star Trek in there. Like, we're teaching our kids science.
Clever.
Like how she was able to bring Flotter back by like cooling down the land, so he like de-evaporated. He evaporated.
Word is condensed.
Condensed.
But de-evaporated. We will take de-evaporated.
The correct term is symbiosis.
Mitochondria. The warp core of the cell.
The warp core of the cell. Very charming. You know what else is charming, Dan? Jesse?
A break.
That would be very charming. Let's take a quick break, and when we return, we will have our second break in Formarino.
All right, can't wait.
All right, be right back.
Come back later. Right back.
It's got Star Trek. It's got Star Trek. It's got Star Trek. Oh, yes, it does. It's got Star Trek. It's got...
You good?
Yeah, I'm good.
All right. All right, we are back.
Hi.
Back.
We have returned from our break, and we will soon get back to, in brief, no.
Totally.
There should be a short amount of time.
We'll keep it quick.
Between now and when we get back to our in-depth discussion of Once Upon a Time.
It's just a crazy idea.
But, time for the Informerino.
But first, I wanted to do a little bit of an Informerino.
We're dangerous.
On the term.
Is it an informal Informerino?
No.
Or is it a formal Informerino?
I think because I have it in my notes, and because I've linked to three different sources, I think that makes it quite formal, actually. A quite formal Informerino.
You guys
I feel that I am underdressed for this.
This is all about
you and your missions.
The phrase "Once upon a time."
Once upon a time.
Yes, thank you, Dan. That's it.
Once upon a time.
Now, everybody listening to this podcast will have heard the term "Once upon a time." Bad. Not only,
exactly,
and probably not for the first time in this podcast, is my guess, because it's a term that has been around in some form or another since 1380.
No, get the fuck out of here!
Yeah, that's the first time.
Flash.
That was like in Middle English.
That's the first time it was attested to. and it's used, a variant of it is used in a huge number of languages. And I'll give a couple of examples in a second.
That's fucked up, dude.
But in English, and this is what I was taught in a folklore class, was that because
folklore class.
Yeah, hey, don't make fun of that shit.
Me and my folklore class.
I focused on folklore and mythology.
He focused.
We need that data.
In the folklore class, they talked about Once Upon a Time. When you think about it, when you parse the term, it's in our brains.
Explain.
We don't. It's one of those things you don't think about.
Details. Right.
Because we've heard it,
fact.
We've heard it since before we could form thoughts.
It's like a
right?
word formula.
It's built in there. You don't think about it. But when you try to parse it out once upon a time.
Yeah.
In English, it's grammatically very odd.
It just means like, you know, whenever the fuck.
But it's perfect. It's a perfect entryway for fables and mythological tales because it has this liminal vibe to it. Like once upon a time. Who the fuck knows what time, but it was definitely a time. This happens once upon a time.
Whenever the fuck.
So anyway, I think it makes sense because when you're
anybody
getting
nobody.
Into the world of fairy, you know what Tolkien would refer to
the
as,
world
as fairy, but with like an A-E, you know?
Yeah, that's the way to spell it.
You cross these spaces, whether in fiction or reality, depending
on
what your belief set is. Yes, these liminal spaces that you can enter into. I like
believe
that.
In fiction.
I like that. Now, I will reiterate a comment Dan made earlier, which is, that doesn't necessarily apply that much to this episode thematically because they didn't use the fantasy stuff as much as they wanted.
Misleading.
Right.
But a couple other things on Once Upon a Time.
Details. It's a well-known fact.
He says both times.
Details.
Sounds like a
it's a well-known fact.
Now, I'm not going to deign to attempt to pronounce the original versions of these, but just to name a few languages, you have variations on this phrase in Albanian, once there was.
Albanian.
Afrikaans, one day, a long time ago.
Wow.
Moroccan Arabic, I've told you what's coming.
I told you about it.
The Armenian, there was not.
Wow.
Which I guess counts as a variation. That's there like was
the best,
once.
The best of times, the worst of times.
Basque, once upon a time, is just straight up.
Yeah, it is.
So again, and this list goes on and on and on. You'll see this in most cultures, some variation. And they're not all modern translations. A lot of them do go back quite a ways. But the other thing is, I was like, okay, they're using it for a title of an episode. Let's see how many other things have used Once Upon a Time as a title of an episode or other things. So first of all, there are, let me
Isn't
see,
there
one,
a TV
two,
show?
Three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. There are 10 different films from 1918 through 2017that are just called Once Upon a Time. So there's that. There's just a bunch of films. There was the television series Once Upon a Time, right? But there's a French television series named Once Upon a Time. There's a Canadian television series called Once Upon a Time.
Oh Lord!
Then you had a number of TV shows. The Twilight Zone has an episode Once Upon a Time.
Yep.
The Prisoner. Shining Time Station.
Oh no,
the
dude.
PBS show.
Is that a Ringo or a George Carlin?
You know, I don't know, but there you go. Once Upon a Time. Star Trek Voyager, of course. Charmed.
Charmed.
Dexter has one called Once Upon a Time. So there's a ton. Music. Oh my gosh, there's a million albums across a number of bands that they're just called Once Upon a Time. Number of songs that are called Once Upon a Time.
Once Upon a Lime.
Now, movies. So there were movies that were just called Once Upon a Time, but then, and I by the way, I don't have numbers for you because I just had to stop counting.
Yeah, man.
But there's Once Upon a Time in the West, Once Upon a Time in America, Once Upon a Time in Anatolia. Once upon a time, Lagan. Once upon a time in India. Once upon a time, .. in Hollywood.
Hollywood.
Once upon a time in Mexico. Once upon a time in the East. Once upon a time in the North. Once upon a time in Wonderland.
Okay, I think we get it.
No, do you really get it? Once upon a time in Shanghai.
Oh man.
Once upon a time in the Midlands.
The Midlands. Oh,
once upon a time in the Midwest. Once upon a time in New York, the birth of hip hop, disco, and punk. That's a documentary.
What's the Midwest one
about? I never heard that.
Once upon a time in the desert. Once upon a time in the South.
Go away.
So we have once upon a time in the North, South, East, and West. Once upon a time in China. Once upon a time in London. Once upon a time in
you don't have the right
in West Oakland. But that's a 5 minute short. So I don't know if that. If that counts.
That doesn't count.
Once upon a time in the Bronx.
That is a terrible plan.
Once upon a time in the hood. Once upon a time in Venice. We'll leave it at that. There are a lot of movies.
No more lying.
The term once upon a time. Okay. I hope you enjoyed
twice upon a rhyme.
That second break Informerino.
That was pretty informative.
Upon a time, 1380, folks. Go, kids, go home and
that's
go.
Some
go
tell, old business.
Go tell your teachers that once upon a time, some variant of that has existed since at least 1380.
I'm not joking, Lee.
We are
real, Lee.
And we are not joking either, Lee. None of us. Not one
okay,
of us.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay, Dan, that's Dan's signal that
Flutter
we should
T, water
get back. Get back to our discussion of this.
That was
of once upon a
that
time.
That was a very informative. Informative segment.
Were you about to say Alsace Lorraine?
No, that was very
that was a very informative Alsace Lorraine.
That was a very informative.
That would have been a non sequitur.
That was a very informative segment. So thank you for that, Patrick.
Right. I feel a little bit like you're placating me, and I'm fine with that.
Okay. No,
I'm
no.
okay.
He's used to it. Yeah,
no,
I'm used to it.
No. Right. Naomi Wildman was played by Scarlett Palmers.
Yeah,
she's great.
Who is in the hit movie Slappy and the Stinkers?
What?
1998.
Yeah, right.
She played Lucy.
What?
Slappy and the
how
Stinkers.
How have I never heard of this movie?
I don't know how it's.
Have you seen it?
It was 1998. It was right in the prime of our lives.
See, okay. I'm going to take this as a no.
I was 20 years old.
Deftly avoiding answering that question. Slappy and the Stinkers. What's it about? Do they have a summary of that on the IMDb?
A group of young troublemakers.
IMDb's nuts.
Okay.
A group of young troublemakers. How we doing?
Okay.
We're good? A group of young troublemakers try to help a sea lion escape to the ocean.
Wow. Okay, you know what's funny? When you kept starting that paragraph, I never would have been able to predict that a sea lion right? was involved.
I so guess
that
that's
was a good little surprise.
I guess that's probably Slappy.
I don't know. Sea lions are pretty stinky.
Oh, no. Yeah, they are.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So is this like a Free Willy, but with a sea lion?
I guess.
Or like a Finding Nemo, but with a sea lion?
Oh, man.
Or is it like
sense of smell and find that
is it like the what was that, the Great Adventure? What's the one with the dog and the cat and the dog?
Milo and Otis?
No, not Milo and Otis.
No, it's some kind of Great Adventure.
The Great Adventure one where they cross the country. Yeah. Not Milo and Otis where they just tortured dogs and cats.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. I can't watch those
I can't watch those.
I know it sucks because Milo I love Milo and Otis growing up, but when you find out they horrifically were just like tossing dogs and cats into the stream and stuff
okay,
like that.
Okay, let's not time this is okay. gonna start to bum me out.
Go. Hey, once upon a time.
Hey, do you think they made her last name Wildman because her hollow story is in the wild, ma'am?
Probably not because the character predates this episode. Yeah.
Well, maybe that's they had this in mind when they made the character already.
It could be. It could.
It was all leading up to this.
Yeah. Yes. I'll grant you that as a possibility. However, I won't grant you it as a plausibility.
You remember when Flotter pulled on that creepy tugger vine that made the high-pitched noise?
You know, thank you for reminding me of one of the many things that made me upset.
That's
about
like
this,
one of those like poison ivy vines.
There was a lot of these little things that were great because they impacted me, because they affected me, right? That's why they're good, but they made me uncomfortable, right? Like the whole the tree with his finger on fire.
So that's
like
something.
That.
Yeah, I know. He was all hooting, and it was hard to tell if he liked it or if he didn't like it. And so he put the shit out. He put it out, and then you could tell that he was like glad that it was out, but I couldn't tell there for a minute like whether he was
I don't know, the jury might still be out on that, because I think he was like, on the one hand, glad it was still out, but he was also kind of digging the lingering pain.
Well, that's what it, I mean,
I think that's
yeah,
his kink.
It wasn't clear.
That's his tree kink.
He's a woodman.
He's a woodman. Well, so those first two sounds,
hard wood.
Those first two sounds were him whining because he was on fire. This is the one at the end when he was all happy and perverted. But then
yeah, so play the different. Yeah, so there's that one. That's the happy and perverted one. What's the finger on fire one? Could you play them both? All right, so that's happy. Could you play them simultaneously?
Well, so like Flotter and
tree monsters are terrified of high pitched noises.
Like
tree creep.
They're like these. Everybody knows them. Like Janeway.
Yeah.
And everybody's grown up with this shit. And they look all awesome and neat looking. But everybody, all the other aliens on Discovery are just fucking Delta Face, Gross Face. Delta Quadrant, Gross Face.
Well, I think it's interesting that this story and this technology of this story has persisted since Janeway was a kid, Harry Kim was a kid, to now. Like, how is this? I mean, that's several decades. It's spanned.
Yeah.
You don't think they've come up
with like
they've
a few?
They've been on holodecks
for a
while.
It's just at least a few.
Yeah, but I'm saying, don't you think they would have updated? Like, I would have. It just seems like...
Well, it's a classic tale.
Yeah, it's a classic tale.
And by the way, this is the...
It's like Mickey Mouse or something.
This is like the slightly creepy thing, right? Yes, as you described, they reference Samantha Wyman.
We've had video games for decades, but like nobody's... I mean, when we talk about
you
playing...
You go back and play Mario?
Mario Brothers. Yeah, we play Super Mario Brothers, but people now like don't usually play the original Super Mario.
Yeah, they play it on the emulator.
Yeah, but it's not
on the Switch store.
But it's not the kind of game that's like all the rage among kids. What's all the rage is like the newer Mario games or like the newer Sonic games.
I get what you're saying. However, I think we should allow for the fact that Samantha Wildman it's not unreasonable for a parent to introduce their child to something that they enjoyed, because I introduced Super Mario Brothers to my children.
I'm just wondering if they made any updates to this to the program since then.
I want to point out something that's a little off-putting is that Samantha Wildman also, among like the other people, she knows that she had this program as a child. Mm-hmm. And in fact, one way we find that out is because was it Flotter who was like, Samantha, hadn't seen you in a while.
All right.
Yeah, but she wasn't a child on Voyager. So that means that the program like updated from the database for like she played it on some Federation colony or
something. So
how does it know that she's there?
There's this intergalactic database.
Is it like an intergalactic cloud storage where there's like, I know every child who comes in here.
It's like Farmtown or whatever on Facebook.
And it has an AI sophisticated enough to extrapolate what that person would look like and actually reverse extrapolate, because what they do is a new person shows up as an adult and they're like, oh, this adult person, I'm going to extrapolate what they would have looked like as a child, and which I believe they can do because I'm not surprised by that, because if you look at Google Photos, it's horrifying that Google Photos, once it knows your face, if you put in an infant photo of you, it'll totally find it.
Yeah.
Knows your face.
It knows your structure. So it's not that surprising.
Google Photos knows your face.
That they're in the Delta Quadrant, that's the one that's a little surprising.
Oh, yeah. That is.
She would have, because think about it. Samantha Wildman, let's work through this logic. Samantha Wildman states herself that she had not gone into this, you know, storyland since she was a kid. She did not show this to her daughter until her daughter was born and grew up to a certain age, which all occurred on Voyager. So the program really is seeing Samantha Wildman in the program for the first time. That's suspicious that it has some connection back to the Federation. They should have pursued that. They should have realized this was something fishy and potentially exploited that to get back to the Federation more quickly.
Yeah, man.
That's what I'm saying.
Do you think technology has progressed at all in the world of holodecks since Janeway was a child?
Hologram?
Do you think in the
holograms?
Do you think like right now we're going through an ultra acceleration of video game technology, and then by the time that Star Trek comes around, there's really not.
It's just holodecks.
It doesn't. The technology doesn't move as quickly because there's not that much more place to take it.
First of all, yes, I do think
because it sounded like they were playing the exact same program Janeway as a kid is what Naomi. And I know we have discussion. Yeah. Kids nowadays do play the original Mario Brothers, but it's not like, I don't know.
I do think you can have technology plateaus.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
You can have plateaus, or you can have a shallowing of the technological curve. Some of that might be due to limitations in technology, which come in fits and starts at times. Some of it could be in limitations of motivation. If a technology has achieved a certain level of stability, there might be less motivation, particularly outside of the context of capitalist society, competitive markets. There may be less motivation to actually pursue and implement improvements.
They probably just have minor processor updates to make the holodeck be able to hold.
But beyond
more shit.
That, I could see holodeck programs. What we have seen is that they are shared, right? Like with Bashir's programs, like in Our Man Bashir and in Bada Bing Bada Bang, etc. We know that people do make and produce and share around these holodeck programs, and no doubt that's some level level of pressure to become more sophisticated and interesting. So I could believe that the technology is getting better, but that does not preclude backwards compatibility. Maybe that's a big key thing in the Federation, is that you got to have backwards compatibility so you can play the old game, play the old stories.
Smart.
So you can load up your thing. And who knows? I mean, maybe that. Maybe Naomi's version of the Flotter and Jetsam game was much more high resolution.
They have to have
maybe had extra chapters.
They have to put a lot of energy into backwards compatibility because they got those consoles that are built into their ships.
Yeah, with the rocks that explode.
Episode of TOS where Scotty said the ship couldn't be fixed, like the console broke and he was like, it can't be fixed, and it's like, oh, you gotta throw away the whole ship now because
they later revealed to be modular, like the whole bridge can just be unplugged.
He said it couldn't be fixed.
Yeah, but you know, Scotty's full of shit. He's drunk half the time. He's completely fucking hammered.
Of whiskey.
I'm not trying to shame the guy. It's like, whatever. He got the job done. He was functional.
That fucking episode where they went what was the Wild West episode?
But there's a way you're like, what was the Wild West?
The one where they...
Is that Tomorrow, All Our Yesterdays? Spectre of the Gun.
Yeah, that was the one where not only was he pounding back the drinks, but he volunteered to take some poison. Some sedative 10 minutes before they had to go do some
That's
shit.
Right. Well, I was thinking in Star Trek 3 when he's explaining something and it's not even Scotty, it's James Doohan. It seems like he's like... Blah, blah, blah. all right, so...
we talked about that one.
Yes, we did. That was a great two episodes.
Check that episode.
Yes,
out.
Check out our two episodes, our two-part discussion of Star Trek III, which is a great movie.
You will love it.
You will. You will. All right, yeah. Dan's looking up something. Jesse and I are just sort of talking because Dan's got that energy where he's like, he's got some fucking voice. Awesome coming.
No, I don't.
It's going to be so fucking awesome.
It's actually the opposite of that. My computer screen locked and now it's giving me
my computer screen.
Oh, this is great. This is real-time problem solving. I'll be like Janeway. It's okay, don't worry about it, Dan. If your computer dies, that's just the way it is. You'll adapt.
You'll adapt.
One more cup and I'll
give me some coffee. Give me some fucking coffee.
There's coffee in that nebula.
One more cup and I'll jump to warp.
Okay, speaking of Ensign Wildman, here's a bit of trivia from the show.
Okay,
what is Ensign Wildman's favorite chapter of The Adventures of Flotter?
Oh shit!
Nope, that's not it. Trevis in the oh shit.
Oh, it's
Flotter.
It's
and
the rubber Trevis tree.
And the rubber tree, was that what it was? Flotter, Trevis, and the rubber. No, because Flotter thought that Trevis
was. That
was
Harry Kim.
Yes, Harry Kim. Harry Kim was talking about how Flotter thought that Trevis might be a rubber tree. So he pushed
no problem. Glad to be of service.
He pushed him off a cliff to
Flotter
see if he bounced.
And the floopy boos.
Is it Flotter and the living nightmare that is late stage capitalism?
No, that was close. You're all very close. It was Trevis and the terribly twisted trunk.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. Now
how twisted can it be?
Do you think
terribly twisted?
Do you think that Trevis and the terribly twisted
terribly
terrible. That's terrible.
Terrible.
Do you think that Trevis and the terribly twisted trunk is a reference to Trevis himself trying to do the Chuck Berry's the twist and twisting up his own trunk? Or do you think
his chubby checker?
He twisted up his chubby checker. Or do you think instead that Trevis had a trunk you'd take on a transatlantic cruise and that was twisted and so he couldn't open it up because it twisted from the humidity maybe on deck?
Well, he's a tree.
The salt
so
air and
trunk.
The humidity twisted the hinges a little bit and so he was having trouble getting into the trunk. He was on the Queen Mary perhaps. What do you think? You think that's plausible, Dan?
Nah.
I think lots of things are plausible.
You're just saying that because you want your previous silly idea to be plausible.
What? Your previous silly idea.
When I said it was only possible, but not plausible.
Which silly idea are you talking about?
I can't remember. It was ridiculous.
You don't even know what you're talking about.
No, but the people listening will remember because their brains...
Oh, so much for that happy ending.
They're paying attention.
And their brains aren't fucking Swiss cheese. I honestly can't remember.
You accused me of something, and I don't know what you accused me of.
You went on a whole thing.
And you don't even remember what you accused me of.
You said, I bet it's this, but you had a smile on your face because you knew it wasn't that.
Acknowledged.
All right, okay.
We're going to be doing a podcast from an old folks home.
You mean next week?
Next week's podcast.
Is that because I remember in Boy Scouts or chorus in school, we'd go to old folks homes and sing.
to the elderly folks, which was which is a nice thing to do. Except
read poetry.
One lady kept we were there in high school singing, and one lady went up to one of the girls in our chorus and like while we were singing and kept screaming, "She's a whore!"
Oh what? My goodness,
she's a whore!
Really?
Yeah, no joke.
Who was it?
I'll tell you at the break.
Oh shit!
This person was not a whore in real life. It was a very nice high school girl.
Well, that's very terrible.
Very well behaved high school girl. Oh, no, the elderly woman clearly was having, you know, she had some.
Was the girl like shaken up by it at all?
Yeah, we didn't know what to do. And everyone's like, but you know, the show must go on. So you just, we all did what you kept singing.
But afterwards, was she all like, "I'm not a whore"?
No, they took the lady away, the old lady away.
Yeah, but I'm
she walked like right up to the stage where we were, not a stage.
Yeah,
you know,
I was just
like,
wondering
like,
if, fuck
you,
pointing with her gnarled finger.
Right, I'm just
she's a whore.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if the girl was her feelings were hurt by that, or she's more just like
probably. I suspect so. Yes. Yeah.
This guy can't feel good even if someone's like not all there to be called.
Smack that shriveled finger off.
I believe there was a slight racial component.
I bet.
That's just a guess. Anyway, back to our regularly scheduled programming.
Back in the day, old people were. Old folks' yeah. homes were oh, full yeah, of not, racist.
Not like today. They're all great.
No more day old pizza laying around.
So we should give some credit to the actors who played Treevis and Flotter, because I think they both did a really great job. Justin Lewis is Treevis, and he's in a number of things, but most notably had a couple parts in Breaking Bad, I think a pretty regular role in Stargate Universe. And he was also in Shogun. He played, I think... like a Portuguese captain.
Wait, here's what
like
it says in IMDb, and this is confusing. It says Luis Ferreira, and then says Treevis, and then in quote parentheses it says as Justin Lewis.
Yes, he used to go by Justin Lewis. Thank you for looking that up, because I actually couldn't figure out which was first. He has two names. I think he changed his name to Justin Lewis because Hollywood is racist to get work for a while, and then I think he changed his name back to what was it, Luis Ferreira, right? So thank you. It's important that we get that right.
You can't be named Ferreira.
Yeah, so he was great. And then interestingly, this Wallace Langham was not listed as like a guest star, but as a special guest star. Now, Wallace Langham, he is one of those people you would totally recognize out of makeup, right? If you go look up his name at IMDb or wherever, I remember him most as Phil on Larry Sanders' Show. He was like one of the producer guys. But he was on CSI, like on like 250 episodes of various CSIs. He was on Monk. He was on The Wild Thornberries. He was on The Boys recently. But yeah, it's like once that picture came up on IMDb, I was like, I know that guy. He's like one of those classic I know that guy kind of guys. And then, of course, we already mentioned Scarlett Palmer's and what a wonderful job she did. A couple of facts about her. This is actually the first time she's playing Naomi Wildman, because Naomi first was an infant, and a baby. And previously, there was another actor played a younger version of Naomi. But she came here to play Naomi Wildman. She thought this was going to be the only episode. And they give her a lot. A lot of the episode hinges on her being able to do a good job. And I think she really, really did an excellent job.
Naomi!
Jesus Christ. She ended up being on 15 more episodes. Or 15 more episodes, I think, Scarlett Palmer's. Naomi Wildman as a character was on a total of 19 episodes in Voyager.
Damn, dude.
Now, here's what's kind of interesting. And I know we haven't talked a lot about the specific danger that, you know, that B story or whatever you want to call it, the A and a half story. But Nancy Hauer played Samantha Wildman. This is actually the last time we ever see Samantha Wildman on Voyager.
Wow. Mm.
She's referenced. We see her in one flashback in a future episode briefly, but you just don't see this character anymore. Now, she doesn't die. And it's just kind of funny to me that there's an episode where she could have died. She was in danger of dying.
Right.
She didn't die, thankfully. I think it was smart. I think the story would have been, I would have been less excited about the story if she had for some reason died. And then that was the moral of the tale is that life is shitty, Naomi. You're going to fucking deal with it.
Space.
So
Naomi!
But it is interesting that they never go back to Samantha Wildman, and she's only referenced in the context of Naomi. Like, they're always saying, like, how's your mom? Or, like, your mom says this. Or, you know, it's always like, it's just like in the text. It's never, like, you never actually get to see her.
Listen to your mother.
Which is just kind of funny. Just kind of funny given the context of this episode.
In usual Star Trek fashion, Naomi was just able to sort of wander onto the bridge.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's her.
And like,
didn't have Captain Picard.
Yeah, and then had to deal with Neelix fucking finally telling her the truth only after he's called out. I was playing this line before.
No more day old pizza laying around.
I was thinking about it, like, why would you leave pizza laying around in the Star Trek future? Wouldn't you just throw it into the energy
recycler?
Doesn't
Tom Paris like pizza, so he's going to eat it?
Can't you just throw the whole thing in like an energy recycler right away? Like, there's
yes, you're right. And they're exciting. They're exaggerating. No, they're highlighting the fact that Tom Paris is a total piece of shit.
Right.
And nobody should be dating him. Because he's an awful person. And you're not going to change
him. Not even the Maquis.
You're not going to change him.
I think B'Elanne only had one line in this episode.
We're going to have to recalibrate these tricorders.
I think that was her only line.
Yeah, it was a good one. It was a good one. We'll have to recalibrate these.
As always.
I think we're going to have to recalibrate these tricorders. I just think that's what we're going to have to do.
Maybe she had a few. If you're looking for a place to land, they must be in pretty bad shape. The problem is there's another ion store in level 5. To take this to... No, that's not her.
Well, there was Stack, like a...
Strickler, we need 3 more phaser drills, U2 pattern enhancers, and med kits. We're going to have to recalibrate these tricorders. Hmm. Put us with the Alpha team and energize.
Does she have more lines than Chakotay?
I should hope so. I was really happy. I was so happy. So. No,
Chakotay
really
had a bunch of lines.
I was really happy that there was not much Chakotay in this episode. Yeah, he might have had more lines than B'Elanne.
He was definitely.
Well, that's his way.
Well, that's not true.
We
need that data.
The warp core up the south.
Because he's got the stuff on the planet or planetoid or asteroid, whatever you want to call it, a little bit during the old helping him out.
What's routine. It made out of polonium?
Yeah.
Well.
Ouch.
I never was a big fan of Chakotay, but as the years go by, I just find it grating. And honestly, I don't chalk that up just to because the actor is a little bit obnoxious. It's really the character. I don't know. It just rubs me the wrong way. I was just never felt like he earned his place.
Is the actor supposed to be kind of like not cool?
Yeah, he kind of sucks. But the thing is, there's other actors that suck too. Where it's like, but like the character's more engaging or interesting or whatever, right? And you know, it's not that you can't have your enjoyment of a character.
He's just a really bland character. He doesn't really show much personality.
Yeah. And there are times where Chakotay shows up and there's some cool stuff. In Caretaker.
Get the fuck out of here.
I think right at the beginning there's some pretty good stuff, but I don't know. I know a lot of people are into Chakotay and that's cool. We're not
nobody.
You know, everyone should be into whatever they're into, but I've just never engaged very much with that particular character, and particularly because I love so many of the other characters, even Neelix, who aggravates me. I'm feeling
the
something.
Name's Neelix.
I'm feeling something. I'm feeling aggravated.
Furball.
Right? I'm feeling aggravated by Neelix. Who's
a furball?
It's just like this guy. I got to listen to him for a couple minutes in order to resolve this plot. Mm-hmm. Ridiculous.
7 of 9, tertiary adjunct of Unit Matrix 01.
I thought that 7 of 9 was going to get a little bit more of a role. I thought it was going to be something like her and Naomi find a way to quickly bond at the end or something.
It's
interesting
that you say that.
Because it was set up like that.
It's interesting that you say that.
Because otherwise there's no point to that whole... I mean, not no point to her. I mean, it's trying to characterize Naomi, but at the same time, the way they did it, it made it seem like that was going there.
And the reason it's interesting that you say that will be revealed...
Uh-oh!
...when we return from the next break. Be right back.
Come back later.
Click the button, baby.
All right, we're back.
Hi, honey.
Thank you. Hi, darling. How are you?
Sweetie.
I missed you
guys. Exactly.
I missed you guys. I had fun. I had fun traveling.
We had a nice
You know,
break.
For a monster, you're very polite.
But I missed you guys. All right. Glad to be back to the podcast. Glad to be back to the third break. The third and final break.
That sounds a little scary.
The third segment of the podcast.
I don't think that's such a good idea.
Everyone's getting excited because they're like, these guys are almost done.
Why, I ought to draw you out.
Now I can listen to the podcast that talks about these guys and makes fun of them.
Exactly. Is my mother dead?
Yeah, we should start. That's what we need to do.
How did they die?
Is my mother dead?
How did they die?
Is my mother dead?
My mother dead.
We need to have a follow-up podcast where it's all like, a separate group of people like critiquing our podcast.
Yeah.
But on the same network, we can make the money.
Didn't we already establish that like podcast commentaries don't make any sense because it's just a bunch of, you can't tell who's talking. You can't tell if the recorded person's talking or the speaking person's talking.
That's why I specify
it totally works, dude.
That's why I specify it's got to be different people. Because you're right. Even though I am entertained by it, you're right. I can respect that your average audience member may not want to hear us playing highlights of our own podcast and trying to discern.
Because we've done that before and it freaks me out.
I know. I mean, I enjoy it. Okay. To me, it's like hilarious. One of my favorite things in the world.
No, absolutely.
But I understand it's aggravating and confusing.
It works. It's not for everyone. It works in like movie commentary and stuff because they turn the volume down on the movie, but you still have something to watch.
Yes.
So you're listening to something else and you still have something to watch. In this case,
good observation.
You're only relying on your ears in this situation. It's like, it's still confusing as fuck.
And that's why. To me, it's hilarious and so charmingly funny. But I also respect that might be a minority opinion. However, you get some other jabronis.
Borg wisdom.
To play.
It's advanced.
Play highlights of us, and then they can critique us or talk about what was good, what was bad, you know, like a sports. Like it should
like
be
a sports.
Like a sports.
Podcast should be like a sports.
Hey, jabroni.
Where you get some people who are
like a sports.
Doing commentary. And explaining, you know, like, oh, they should have done this or that, or they went a little too long here, or that, you know, that sort of thing.
I like this Neelix line.
Thought I'd pay you a visit, see how things were going.
We're going?
How are things going?
that was another good Neelix line.
That is good.
Oh, there was a line by Tuvok that I was actually meaning to play earlier.
Okay, well, you can play that line, but I'm just going to tell the audience that we have not forgotten.
No, we haven't.
We went to break with this big tease.
Okay. Well, I can play it after we reveal the tease.
I like continuing to tease people because since you're not letting me aggravate them by playing tapes of our own podcast, this is a new way I can aggravate the audience in my own small way.
Fire. In accepting the inevitable, one finds peace.
Yes.
Now, on the one hand, that's like a really, you know, smart.
I think it's good advice.
It's great advice.
Yeah.
On the other hand, though, it's also kind of like, at what point do you decide a situation is inevitable? Like, that has to, it involves you actively giving up.
There's only a couple of inevitable situations.
And like, and you don't ever want to give up as long as there's a chance.
Right.
And so it sounded like Tuvok was saying, like, whatever happens. But
I didn't interpret that as that. I didn't interpret him as saying give up. I was interpreting it as him saying, you don't need to be freaking out that you're about to die.
Yeah, right.
The problem is that advice, it's good advice. I think that's advice is good to give somebody like when they're like 10, 12, 14. It's like advice you should grow up with and sort of incorporate into your thinking as opposed to being giving it 10 minutes before you're running out of air.
Right. No, see, I do totally agree with that advice because it is comforting when some people get really mad when things are out of their control. And for me, it's kind of relaxing because I'm like, it's not my fault, you know, whatever's going to happen. So I think it's excellent advice. But like I said, I think the trick is recognizing when something is inevitable. That's the whole problem, is you want to keep trying because you don't want to admit that things are inevitable.
I took it to mean that.
So it's kind of in a way saying you have to learn when to let go.
Okay, I can see that interpretation. I interpreted it slightly differently, that he wasn't referring to their specific situation as being inevitable, but that is death in principle being inevitable. So that when it comes, don't worry, because literally when it happens, that was inevitable. It was going to happen at some point. When it happens, so you don't need to be stressing so much about it.
He gave that whole speech about how he, like, you know, he talked to his kids and he knows everything's going to be cool. And like, that was pretty nice.
He somehow used logic to be really emotionally soothing.
Yeah,
Tuvok does that a lot.
Yeah.
Tuvok often gives.
He's the perfect Vulcan.
Very good advice. He is the perfect Vulcan. He's certainly the best Vulcan on Star Trek.
Yeah, yeah.
We've said this many times before. Yeah. We love so many of the other Vulcans, but
they're just more calm. Like,
yeah, exactly. Weird. They've got other shit going on. Whereas Tuvok's most of his shit, he's got his shit together.
He's
like older, advanced his career, highly skilled, and he's just surrounded by a bunch of like juggle fucks. He's just like in the Delta Quadrant with a bunch of fucking morons. He's just constantly having to deal with these people. Right. He's like, I like them, but they're driving me nuts. He's like, I'm freaking out. I have to use my. He's like, I'm using all my mental powers to not freak out on these people.
It's not even that.
You'll be nice.
That's right. Okay.
Borg wisdom.
Yes. Thank you. That's a good segue.
Yeah.
Back to Naomi and Seven. So
7 of 9, tertiary adjunct of unit matrix 01.
Prior to the break.
I am Borg.
Prior to the break, Dan, you were saying that you were expecting more.
I was expecting it to wrap up. Like they'd come to.
So
they would end up like bonding for a quick
Here's
moment.
A deal with this scene. A couple deals with this scene. Dan, put it away. Quit taking that thing out.
Acknowledged.
Hi, honey.
So first of all, this scene was one of those sort of, remember when I was saying earlier that they had an initial draft that was a little bit more grand, all fantasy land, all that other stuff. They Berman told them to change it. So they were making sort of like quick changes where all the writers, not all, but you know, a bunch of writers, Joe Manosky, all these, they were all like helping Michael Taylor with a second draft, get this new story together in time for, you know, pre-production and filming and all that other stuff. Right.
Right.
Okay. Right. So during that process, Brandon Braga was like, you should have a scene between Naomi and Seven, right? Because there's like some similarities there in terms of tragedy, youth, you know, it's a counterpoint to like Neelix. Neelix is worried about his trauma from his youth, right? And Seven is another person who suffered trauma around a similar age, even younger than Naomi. And so it's like a different example, right? So that makes sense. But it was a bit of a, my understanding, a bit of a late addition, a sort of an offhand thing that they sort of tossed in there as a little bit of fun, a little bit of character development. And on the day when they filmed it, they were like, there's a connection between Seven of Nine and Naomi that Jerry Ryan and Scarlett Palmer's that really, really worked well. It elevated the scene beyond even what was on the text of the script, right? And what happens after this episode is, even though we don't see Samantha Wildman again, her mom, Naomi's mom, we do see Naomi develop a relationship with Seven of Nine over time.
Okay.
So,
cool.
And that apparently was not planned. It all came out of the fact that they just interacted so well. And Scarlett Palmer's did such a great job in this episode.
But that original scene wasn't put in there with the intention of like bookending it at anything in that episode. Like,
I think it was just meant to be to show Naomi where she was at, you know, that she's anxious about things and give her some characterization, as well as probably to give Seven of Nine some lines, because as you note, there are some people who don't get a lot of lines in this episode. Seven of Nine certainly doesn't get a tremendous amount of lines either. So, you know, trying to get everyone to have a little piece, you know, that's not unusual where they try to give, you know, even B'Elanna got a very brief line, but they got her in there at least.
Mm-hmm. The doctor.
Neelix was all talking about Naomi's anxiety scale. He's like, he's being such lame. a helicopter godparent.
For real,
he was being a little bit of a helicopter godparent. I agree with that. And now, granted, I think you see that happen sometimes with people who aren't parents who then have to take charge over a child. So it's new to you, right? And especially if you're taking over, you know, somebody
new
who can, like,
you.
Talk
new
to you. And like use holodecks and stuff like that. It's just something you got to navigate.
The doctor was sad. He was sad for Naomi. So he has emotions. Or he has at least simulates emotions.
He's a person, baby.
He's like a full-fledged, like, have we established that the doctor has emotions?
Yeah, yeah.
Is he sentient?
That goes with that. I think that's right from the beginning.
Yeah, it's just kind of crazy. He's a hologram.
He's Dr. Feelings.
Yeah, I mean, it's not all simulated. It's not just simulated.
Well, you can have a philosophical discussion.
Okay, we're all computers.
This is one we always,
Or you could say you could never tell if something has an internal, like if something's sophisticated enough.
Yeah.
And now we're dealing with that in real life with AIs where they're passing the Turing test in the sense where you're like, I can't tell whether this is a computer or a human. It's still, you're not, still not 100% sure what's going on there. Although, like you hinted at, Dan, you're not 100% sure what's going on in other humans as well. Mm-hmm. I could be the only human mind. I could be the only mind in the entire universe.
Yeah, or it could be me.
And all the rest of you are just inventions of my imagination to keep me from going insane.
Do you ever think that you've died like at least a dozen times? It's just that when you die, like you go flip over to another dimension where you're still living.
Your life keeps going. Yeah. I have thought that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Frequently.
Yeah. Cause there's a couple times where I think like, I don't know how I didn't die.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, yeah, you've had some adventures, my friend.
Some adventures. Adventures in Dan. Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, Neelix was like lying to Naomi a lot. He says he told her his sisters were far away. His sisters weren't far away.
No, they just did.
They were dead.
Yeah, because he was in denial. That's what I said before. That's why I'm sympathetic to Neelix. So, look, this is in some ways like, it's almost a riff off of
life. And Naomi goes, do you ever pretend that nothing bad happened to your family? And he says, like, yes. Sometimes.
No, it's like all the fucking time.
Yeah, like right fucking now, by the fact that he said sometimes and he's telling her that they're far away.
But what I'm getting at is this story has hints of Life is Beautiful. Do you remember that movie? The Roberto Benigni Holocaust movie? Really fucked up, intense movie where he has to like pretend everything's fine for his son. Neelix does not go that far. But he's kind of doing that where there's a tragedy going on and he's doing everything in his power to prevent Naomi from having to endure this. But I agree with Janeway. And I think the episode authors strongly agree with Janeway's position. She makes the argument, yes, it sucks that she might have to deal with this tragedy, but would suck more if it came out of the fucking blue, as opposed to her understanding that her mother is currently in a dangerous situation.
And it was too late because it did come out. She discovered in like
exactly
a terrible way.
And then she shows up, like you said, on the bridge because there's no security. Yeah.
And then like finally, like Neelix breaks down and tells her the truth, and we're supposed to think that that means he's finally learned, but it's just because he got called out.
Yeah.
You know. I don't know.
I guess they don't have.
He's a rat.
They don't have good psychologists on Rhinax.
No.
On Talaxia.
When Naomi said Deck 6, Section 9, do you think Section 9, Deck 6 means vertical. Do you think Section 9 means horizontal? Is that like when they say Deck 6, Deck 6, they go up vertical of 6 levels, and then Section 9, does that mean they go horizontal?
Effectively. To a different,
is that how they...
Wait, Dan, could you do me a favor and maybe say that like 2 or 3 more times?
Well, you guys aren't picking up what I'm putting down, so I have to...
It's because you went into the repeat explanation before we had a chance to agree, and the answer is yes, I do think that.
So you think that like when they say deck 6, it goes vertical 6 decks, and Section 9, it goes horizontal around.
Presumably. Some part of that deck.
Yeah. Some
do you think that? Do you think that it goes up and then left, or do you think it goes like diagonal?
I don't know how to interpret what you're saying.
Do you think
saying.
It's like a free form thing inside where it's not like tunnels that the turbo lift goes through? It's not tunnels. It's just a big.
Are you talking about like Discovery style inside?
Oh no, I don't like think it's like
where do you think it's like a completely open area and it's on an arm that can move like in smooth like. Curves and things like that. You know what I'm saying? Like it's a.
I think they're just going up and down.
Like there's an empty layer surrounding all of the ship, and empty layer is where the turbo deck can move
Voyager
around.
Voyager isn't all that big.
Or where the turbo deck can move around. Turbo lift can move around freely, not like through tunnels, but through a free open.
They landed that shit on a planet, like, and everybody was walking like around outside of it. It's not that big of a
like
ship.
A plane. It's got its own plane that it can kind of curve and go.
No, I don't buy
all
it.
Sorts of wishy washy ways. Or is
absolutely.
This, so I think it's more like a tunnel that goes up into the horizontal and vertical.
Well, I think it's just like up and down elevators.
But you just said, we just agreed that Section 9 means it goes horizontal.
Yeah, turbo lifts can go horizontally, but not you're describing, okay, and again, what the audience can't see, and what's, I believe, flummoxing Jesse a little bit here, is Dan is miming these free floating like turbo lift tubes flying through his ship.
And they're not like, even tubes.
I'm saying I think they are tubes, and I think that the tubes can, we've seen them go horizontal because we see the light behind them. You know, the light goes vertical, bloom, 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 like even on TOS, and then sometimes it goes like boom, 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 boom,
like so. It can't go from a straight line to any section to any deck and section. It has to follow the tubes. It can't just.
I
go
think
directly
it has
to
follow
to them
the tubes
because it's not an open plane.
Because I don't think this is the USS Discovery.
It's not.
I think that's what I think.
Plane okay. That's stuck to an arm that's kind of moving it in free form.
Right. Okay. No,
as not the line drawing tool, the freeform drawing tool.
It's not that big of a ship.
Yeah,
I'm with Jesse. Voyager is like the smallest ship.
It's kind of got it's got kind of a fat center to it.
Yeah, I mean it's good size.
Yeah, it's
but
beefy.
It's smaller
it's
than
beefy,
it's smaller than all the other ones.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
it's just
mm-hmm.
like you know it's a different kind of ship.
All right. What do you think is the right thing to do? I think in this situation, say you put yourself in the place of Neelix. Most everybody has already tacitly or explicitly, implicitly or explicitly stated that they think that Neelix probably didn't go about it the right way. Mm-hmm. But what would you do? What would you do if you had a child, her mother's in danger, you don't have any information
on what's going with her mother.
If I started getting pressure from people around me, I would definitely start to rethink what I was doing, and like I would definitely.
Do you think you would initially do what Neelix did, but then listen to the pressure more quickly, or do you think they wouldn't even go down that path?
I don't think.
Would you just be like, "Yo, your mom is like fucked up."
No, I mean, I would.
I don't know what's going on.
I would try to be tactful, but like, I wouldn't say like, oh, I'm sure everything's fine. Like, right. I wouldn't straight up lie, which he straight up said to her.
Which, by the way, most people, not most people. I won't put a number on it. I think plenty of people would think that is fine to say, but there's nuanced differences between saying, oh, I'm sure she'll be fine versus what Neelix was doing. And particularly since Neelix only said that much later in the process. Because if you recall, early on, they lost contact. That was it. And that's shady. You're like, okay, we lost contact. That means something's up, but we don't know what's up. You don't know. And people lose contact all the time, right? So there could be all sorts of things that's maybe gone wrong that are not a problem. However,
it's like every other episode.
But by the time Neelix, and I agreed with you earlier, Dan, is when Neelix is like, I'm sure everything's fine. I think that was the point where Neelix already knew that there was a crash landing onto an asteroid and the ship had, there was like debris and plasma fires on the planet. Now, that's
you're
when
not
I,
Earth or that, water or plasma.
That's when I don't feel comfortable telling a child, oh, I'm sure it's going to be fine.
Right.
When there's
burning green flame
wreckage and they're like, oh, they're 3 miles underground. So yeah, I wouldn't have said it at that time. I could see it being fine to say it like just because you hadn't heard from her from her usual call in. I could say like, oh, yeah, I'm sure she's fine because you don't have enough information.
I see that point of view, but I don't agree with it. I think if it were me, if I didn't have enough, I wouldn't tell someone I think it's fine if I didn't have enough information about it.
All right. So what would you say?
Given that they disappeared, I'm not going to just say, oh, it's fine. It's like, because how do I know? I don't know shit. You know, it like doesn't, and there's.
So, okay. So you're Dan the Godfather, right?
Yes.
Godfather Dan. You go up to Naomi.
Lord help us.
And Naomi is like, why hasn't my mom called?
Naomi!
And so what you're saying is you'd be like, okay, here's the deal, Naomi. There's some good news and there's some bad news. The bad news is we haven't heard from your mom. What's the good news? You're going to get to live with me.
Unlimited flotter.
Yeah, you can play flotsam and jetsam all you want.
Flotter tea water.
How about you, Jesse? What would you do?
What was it in Ninja Turtles that Casey Jones said when April got fired? He's like, oh, at least you won't have to do something anymore. Because like she got fired, and he was trying to break it easy to her that she got fired, but he was
like, you don't have to go into work tomorrow or something like
that. Something like
I guess I'm okay with the idea, like at the very beginning of like just sort of like a little bit of a distraction because you don't know what's happening.
Yeah,
fine. But by the time Janeway says like you really need to tell her, that's like that's when he should have told her.
Yeah.
Like that was the time to tell her. Mm-hmm. Like this is really what's happening. Like we didn't know it was happening, so we tried to keep you occupied.
Guess we didn't know.
But now we know.
I'm with that too because I think there's a time function that we're not necessarily taking into account here, which is I'm fine. Like I said, if it's just the initial hints of like lack of contact, it's only been like a day, which is not unusual. Okay, all right.
Starfleet.
But then you add days and days, even if there's no other information, forget about the crash landing. Then you got to be like, okay, look, no, I'm sorry. Like, yeah, there's something's up. We don't know what's up.
Right.
I would say it's okay with distraction at first in those first few days. And I wouldn't say anything until I knew until I had enough information to say something, meaning I wouldn't say I'm sure they're okay. If she asked, I would say like, I don't know. We haven't heard anything yet. Yeah. But as soon as we hear something, you know, but I think the distraction thing was a good route to go for at first.
Now,
and then like
at the very beginning.
The other question for you is would you continue to employ the Flotter McBotter?
Flotter tea water the third.
The third. I obviously Naomi likes this, so sure, it's a good go-to, but let's take that out of the equation. Let's say Naomi does not have a particularly favorite holodeck.
The Wime of the Woods.
What would be an alternative story or environment, for
the Wime of the Woods
on the holodeck for Naomi to go in? What would be something that would apply to you guys?
Like you take her to a Wild World.
Wild World.
You want to go to Wild World?
Yeah.
For folks who live outside
of the Northern Virginia
and not 30
area,
years ago,
and, yeah, and temporarily who are not temporarily placed in the early 1990s, Wild World was a water park.
Now it's a Six Flags.
It became Adventure World, yeah, with Cal Ripken Jr. as like the
Cal Ripken Jr. used like to be a baseball player.
He was a spokesperson, Then it just turned into a Six Flags.
The
So Dan, you would go to Wild World. You would take Naomi to Wild World, yeah. Particularly funny because there are better water parks even in the region. Even in our region, there are better water parks.
What's better than Wild World?
Kings Dominion Water Park. I would actually say Cameron Run. It doesn't have as much stuff, but it's cheaper.
I would take her to some kind of amusement park or maybe like a video arcade or
mini golf.
They don't have video arcades. They have holo programs.
But the holo program of a video arcade. I don't know what you're calling
hologram.
It. Hologram.
That's
arcade.
What we're talking about.
You just call
about,
it an yeah. arcade, can't you? I mean, I get it. I know an arcade is an architectural thing. I also get that. So yes, to avoid confusion, we'll say video arcade.
It could be a more interactive Pac-Man, where more holodeck style, yeah, as opposed to
could be
video game style.
Mm-hmm. Could be. I don't know. I was trying to think about this. I was like thinking in terms of like storybooks, like a holodeck version of Lord of the Rings or something like that. But then I was like, yeah, that's probably too intense. What about like Calvin and Hobbes? Like, I want like a holodeck version of like
Garfield.
Calvin and Hobbes.
They would never make that because Bill Watterson doesn't want to sell out.
No, I understand that. But like a knockoff one where Calvin's just walking around
peeing everywhere.
He's like peeing everywhere. But otherwise, you could enjoy it.
Like those bumper stickers people have.
Yeah, something like that. Mm. All right. Any other points? I think we're about at the end. Dan's looking at his phone, looking at some notes, no doubt.
I had an issue with this thing that Harry said. He goes to Neelix, he goes, think about it. Think about all the things she's experienced. Stars being born, yes, supernovas, yeah, life forms no one from the Alpha Quadrant has seen before.
Many crew people dying.
Right. When I was a kid, I would have given anything for a chance like this. I don't think he would have given anything to be stuck out a bazillion light years from home.
All that shit with Seska.
I mean, exploring shit is cool, but only if you know that you can get back home when you need to.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. I think that was...
Harry, what you're trying to say is you don't want to practice your eclair. And yeah, you would rather be flung across galaxy and in constant danger. I did think that Harry's comments were a little ridiculous.
Did you notice in Naomi's room she had some weird red horsey statue thing?
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah,
it was good.
You know, that room looked a lot homier than all the rooms in the 32nd century. All those rooms mm-hmm. were so bland. But I guess that's because you could make them whatever you wanted. But like, there's that whole space station and Discovery. Everything was just total sterility.
It was like no fun in sterility. The 32nd century.
Yeah.
They didn't even like do much with the holodecks.
They got to relearn fun.
I guess it's just because they have like programmable matter and they can make whatever they want appear, but they don't actually do it. They just keep it in that.
You could do it. Why don't you do it?
Oh.
All right. Mm-hmm. Dan's continuing to peruse his list. Jesse and I have exhausted our
pretty much yeah,
our notes here, our list. Dan looks like he's got at least.
Oh, there was
one thing left. Oh, Jesse's.
Oh,
got
right
one
at
thing
the
left.
End, they bring it all.
They both have at least one thing left, and it might be the same thing. Oh wow, this could be some kismet right here at the end of the episode.
Neelix says, "Captain." Janeway says, "Just checking on my future captain's assistant." And Neelix says, "Right now, she's off to conquer a giant beetle." Janeway says, "Oh, sounds like a dangerous mission." Neelix says, "She can handle it."
Yeah.
That's when we know he learned.
He learned.
He
lesson.
Learned.
Was that what you were going to refer to, Jesse?
Well, as that scene goes
on, I hear a giant beetle lives there.
And the show ends. It wasn't too clear if you could hear it very well, but I had the subtitles on, and like they were talking about like Stinger. Like was like, okay, Janeway was talking about some adventure she had with Flotter, and it involved Stinger. Like the biggest mosquito or something.
Oh, no, that sounds horrible.
That's what the subtitles said.
Oh, no, I didn't hear that, and I didn't have the subtitles on.
Yeah, and like, and from basically, I couldn't really hear that when I was watching it.
But you could see
but
it.
I could read it. And
you
I was
could
like,
read
what?
It with your eyes. It's
Stinger,
wild.
The biggest mosquito.
Wow.
Ugh, moist palms. Sappy fingers.
Sappy fingers.
And that's all
indeed.
I got.
She's sensitive.
All right. Dan, anything else to play? Any other comments to make before we close this down?
Feeling a little stiff, my slippery friend. Oh. And you? I'm feeling a little washed out.
Slippery friend.
I think you're scared of the tree monster.
I'm not scared of any tree monster, Miss Wildman.
Enjoyed this episode. I enjoyed this episode. It was fun. It was weird. I can see.
Yeah, I did enjoy it.
I can see how a lot of the people behind the scenes people were disappointed with how this turned out, even though it's a well-liked episode, just because they said the original script with the full fantasy stuff, they said it was a little bit more interesting and engaging thematically.
Why not?
Sad that we didn't see that, but I still think totally. This is still a fun time. I can see why people come back to this one. There's some good lessons in there. Neelix looks like an asshole, which is always fun.
Guess who I found at the replicator?
Guy.
Where did you learn to make such silly puns?
Silly puns.
His bark was worse than his bite.
So that does it for us this week. However, that's not the end of the Isekai Star Trek podcast. No, no, no.
No, no.
No, no, no. Oh, I forgot. This is episode 246 of the
Isekai. Oh, you almost forgot it.
I almost forgot, but I got it in. So this is episode 246 of the Isekai Star Trek podcast. Previous week was episode 245. Next week will be episode 247. And
is my mother dead?
And on episode 247. Jesus, on the next episode, on episode 247, we will be discussing TOS's The Corbone Mite Maneuver.
Explain.
Another classic. No need to explain. You all can watch it next week. Watch the episode between now and next week because that is what we will be discussing. And do you have a question about this week's episode, a previous week's episode, or next week's episode, The Corbomite Maneuver? Well,
yes or no would suffice.
Did you wonder what the fuck Dan was on about?
If yes, you can send us.
When?
You can send us an email.
I'm just talking shit.
At feedback@itsgotstartrek.com.
Not feedback.
With your comments and or questions.
Details. Well-known fact.
You can also reach out to us on social media where we love to interact with our fans.
I don't think that's such a good idea.
And even with some of our detractors, at...
That sounds a little scary.
We don't have 2 minutes.
At It's Got Star Trek. That's the at symbol, It's Got Star Trek on...
That Twitter. Is a terrible plan.
Twitter, Mastodon, Blue Sky, Facebook, Instagram, all that other jazz. YouTube. YouTube's a good place to watch or listen to the podcast on your TV.
Why not?
Usually watching a static image because we do not videotape these podcasts as of yet. If you give us enough money on our Patreon, we might consider doing more videos. And
you know, I forgot how ugly this guy was.
You can get to the Patreon at patreon.com/... It's got Star Trek.
Slash.
Okay. So Corbo might maneuver important. Next week. Look forward to that. We look forward to speaking at you again.
Speaking at you.
Very soon. We'll talk to you next
Deal
week.
With it.
Goodbye.
I need my beauty sleep.
And how are you today, Mr. Trevis?
Feeling a little stiff, my slippery friend.
Oh.
And you?
Well, now that you mention it, I'm feeling a little washed out.
Well, it's about time you showed up. The tea is getting cold.